20,000 feet up, breaking all the lights on the doors, and I ain't seen no ceilings. We came in through the top floor. Three oars rip right round your jugular.
You're listening to Feminist Killjoys, PhD, an hour of feminism, pop culture, and politics as discussed by two professional killjoys.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Melody.
And today we'll be discussing a current events roundup with news from Portland, Minneapolis, Manchester, and more. And we have another segment of our Accountability Corner. But first, Melody, where can our listeners find us on the internet?
Thank you for asking, Rachel. They can find us in select places. You can subscribe to us on your favorite podcast application. You will receive extra FKJ points if you leave us a review on iTunes, which is a great way to spread the word and gain new followers. On the social meds tip, you can follow us on the gram, on the Twitter, and on Facebook. We have two separate pages. You can like our page for updates about our episodes, or you can join our closed community page, which is called Feminist Killjoys Community WTF Power exclamation point. Again, that's our closed community group where you can talk to us about anything show related or anything feminist related. And then we also have a Feminist Killjoys PhD mixtape, which is curated by Rachel, and you can find that on the Fi, which I'm very close to getting myself, the Fi. And then if you have extra dollars and would like to support feminist media makers, you can visit our website for a one-time donation at feministkilljoyspodcast.com. Just click on the birdie. Or you can become a Patreon member of our podcast and leave a micro mini monthly donation. Patreon subscribers also get access to our newsletter, which is curated by Rachel. It comes out once a week and it is called the Killjoy Review. And last but not least, you can always email us, Melody's preferred form of communication, at fkj.phd@gmail.com.
Boom. We are in the same room.
We are in the same room.
I'm kind of trapped in a closet.
He's problematic.
It's true, I know. No shout outs to R. Kelly. But we are here together, IRL. That means in real life.
Hot mic.
Hot mic. How is it going, Melody? How's your time in Boston been? The Boston area.
It's been really fun.
What have you been doing?
Eating a lot of food.
Truth.
I'm pooping more than I know I'm eating a lot. So yeah. I've found that my vacation style is I just go around and eat a bunch of vegan food.
Mm-hmm.
And I also went to Boston Calling with you. We didn't really debrief about that.
We didn't. It was because it was such a fucking shit show. I mean, it was amazing, but it was a shit show, and I think it'll be the last festival I ever go to because I'm already much too old to endure that. But mostly you said it was like Friday night in particular was a hot mess compared to the rest of the weekend.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Twitter will agree with me on that. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of complaints on Twitter about the food lines. Basically, if you attended Boston Calling on Friday, you spent probably the majority of your time standing in line, be it for water or a bathroom or food. Food was especially atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
And then right before Chance the Rapper went on, it started raining out. And while Bon Iver was still performing, a bunch of Chance fans showed up, which is fine, but they were ready for a hip hop show.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the switching from Bon Iver to Chance the Rapper back to back caused some grief if you weren't like, you know, the first couple rows of Bon Iver, the way the stages were set up.
Totally. I also just want to say, like, that's, like, 100% not coded racism because it was, like, largely white people. And, like, the biggest fight that happened during Bon Iver was some fucking white dude who was being a fucking troublemaking piece of garbage. Do you remember that? Like, the, like, super big fight? Were you there at that point?
I started multiple fights.
Melody did start some fights. But this was, like, well, we talked about how it felt like being in the pit at certain points. Like, it wasn't, this was not a punk show. None of the bands were punk bands on Friday, but it felt like there were multiple, like, mosh pit experience feelings. Anyway, I just wanted to say that was not, like, oh, hip-hop fans came. It wasn't coded racism. It was a lot of white people. All.
It was a lot of young, drunk.
There were people of color there, too. I'm tripping over myself, but it was a largely white audience. Anyway, so just wanted to because some people might hear, like, oh, Chance fans, hip-hop show, that's
oh,
coded.
Oh, no, no, no,
which
no,
is not
no, no.
what you were
this
saying.
This was, like, 19-year-old people on Miller Lite, mostly white, with no manners, I guess.
Well, and drunk, and, like, and just young, and, yeah.
Yeah, but I did, I mean, so it wasn't a very comfortable place. It started pouring out when it was cold out, right before Chance went on. We had been standing for much too long. We didn't take enough sitting breaks because we're old, and so we have to do things like that. and then there was just some, like, just some people just being inconsiderate. But I will say there were multiple times that I, even when I was kind of, like, in a crabby mood, I would look around, and so, there was so much happiness around. Like, people were just loving every minute of it. Thank you.
We have some ambient noise of polar seltzer being poured into a glass.
Polar, better than La Croix.
It's true.
You're drinking tart cherry lemonade, or tart cherry limeade.
I tried flavor.
The raspberry lemonade kind before. Polar is the East Coast version of La Croix, and it is superior.
It is, and I feel bad admitting it, but it is.
It's okay.
And cheaper. Anyway, yeah, it was totally happy, and by the time Chance was playing, even though we were in pain and freezing and wet, we were happy.
And then tell them about the best part.
So there were tons of people there, and there was no way that we were going to try to get, like, in the front row or into the major part of the crowd. So we were basically, like, so far away from the stage that we mostly were watching the screens of the stage, which is another reason that I'm like, why am I here? I'm watching a fucking television screen, like, in the freezing rain. But we were also kind of behind, like, sort of like a, it looks like a tech pit of, with, like, lights and, like, kind of like a little base, but it certainly didn't look like a stage. Like, the stage was further away, but unbeknownst to us, and we were, like, right behind that, unbeknownst to us, Chance decided he was going to do Same Drugs, which is, like, a quiet song on the album and one of my favorite songs, from that tiny little stage. So we basically had front row you know, front row spots for one of his songs. And it was totally bizarre to be, I felt so, I said this to you on the way out, I think, like, I just felt so fangirly in a way that I have not felt in so long, like, since being a fucking teenager at, like, a Saves the Day show, have I felt, like, so, like, oh, I'm so close to this person, I can't believe that I'm, like, actually within the same breathing room as this person, which was really fun. It was fun to feel that excited, and I think it was also, like, honestly, like, coming from a punk background, like, part of me felt embarrassed that I was going to Boston Calling, and still part of me feels embarrassed that I like music that tons of people like, but it was so fun to just, like, be swept up in that. It was really good. And he's amazing. I mean, he's amazing. I mean, he's not, I, you know, I wish he was more political and not, there was at one point that he asked everybody in the crowd how much, if we wanted to go to heaven. and it was very funny. And no offense to I'm sure we have Christian listeners, and that's totally fine. But
just with our punk background,
yeah, it was just like a very different kind of question. So, you know, it's not like he's like the most important musician in terms of my politics or whatever. But does amazing stuff for Chicago. He makes beautiful music. He's full of light and joy and love, and is just. I feel like just like a beam of light every time. And he sang his verse on Ultralight Beam, which was so cool.
It was cool. Wow, our microphone is so amazing that it's picking up on your seltzer.
Do you hear that fizzy pop?
This could be yours by drinking Polar Seltzer.
Give us money, Polar. That's another thing. Speaking of non-alcohol, so I was totally sober at Boston Calling, which was which was fun. I'm taking a little sobriety break, and that's, it was like, oh, I can be at like this miserable outdoor fest and not drink and everything will be okay. Yeah. So anyway.
Probably better for you because then you weren't so dehydrated.
Totally. Totally.
Wow. Do you usually drink fizzy water on air?
Not in a glass.
So the fizzy usually stays within the can.
Yeah. I like the ambient noise though.
Makes people feel like they're right here with us.
It's true.
Anything else you want to check in about? I didn't really ask how you're doing because I
no, I mean, and you could say more about what it's like to be a because you. So I only went Friday night. You were staff the rest of the weekend, you know, working. I did yoga. I taught a bunch of yoga classes. I taught a triple on Saturday. I did some work. Watched some Dawson's Creek with my partner. went to a picnic, a little gathering on Memorial Day or on Sunday rather. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, it's been good.
Mm-hmm.
Boston Calling was fine for the rest of the time. Although, on the punk note, so Piebald played.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, okay, plus one for Boston Calling, because I think they were trolling people because they booked Converge mm-hmm. and Piebald on a main stage.
Yeah.
And they don't play to, like, huge audiences.
Right.
And even the guy in Piebald was like, I think this is the biggest audience I've ever played for in my
life. Yeah.
So I think that they were obviously allowing Boston artists to yeah. have slots on the main stage, which is great.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if listeners aren't familiar with Converge, it's the type of punk that's like, like that, where you yeah. don't understand the lyrics unless you know the lyrics. And so if you're not into that type of music, it's just very jarring.
Yeah.
And I just feel like
it was so many people at Boston Calling were like, what is happening?
Yeah. I just thought that it was like an amazing
thing. That's great.
It's like, yeah, well, you also listen to ridiculous music that other people would look at and be like,
right.
And so this is what punk people like to listen to. But yeah. it wasn't even nothing about that festival was calling in punk people. So
right.
like the fact that they were even right. booked is just amazing.
Yeah.
But so shout out to Boston Calling for doing that, because
yeah.
I think that was intentional.
That's
also
cool.
Shout out to Tig Notaro, who I saw in the comedy club section. And Phoebe was actually there too, mm-hmm. but I had to work during her set. But Tig Notaro was very funny.
Yeah.
And her and I had an exchange.
Oh really? Oh fun.
Yeah, I was in front row because I escorted somebody over from the ADA section, and she was and the person I escorted over was a big Tig fan, so I was
yeah.
And then I don't know, she was just she got off on a tangent. She's obviously really funny, and I said something like, "But what about the birthday party?" Because she started talking about Ellen and Portia.
Yeah,
and the crowd was like so excited that she was friends with Ellen and Portia, so
uh-huh.
she milked it for a really long time
yeah.
and like got way off topic. And so I shouted, but what happened at the birthday party with Ellen and Portia?
Yeah.
And then she said, I'm sorry, my comedy boss here. This is my comedy manager who like keeps me on task and like was talking
That's
to me.
That's cute.
And then at some point, the person that was sitting next to me turned to me and was like, you really work with her.
Oh, that's amazing. That's so great. I love that.
I don't work for a team,
right.
but it was, I mean, I think at the moment I looked very lesbian-y. I had the sleeveless jean jacket thing
right.
I stole from my partner.
Right.
So I looked like a lesbian, which is great. And so I think I was around other queer people.
Yeah.
And at one point I was like, one of the reasons people were so excited is because it was just like a bunch of lesbians. It was
mm-hmm.
going to be a story about a bunch of lesbians hanging out.
Mm-hmm,
and so I was like,
mm-hmm.
it's because you're lesbians. And I think
yeah.
the person next to me heard that. So she
yeah.
thought like, oh,
right.
She
right.
must be on the in. And
right.
I think I was maybe sitting in like a special section I wasn't supposed to sit in. But I had to escort somebody over, and
right.
I just was sitting with her. So
right. That's
anyways.
Fantastic. I love that. Yeah. Good weekend.
It was a great weekend, except for all the news. But before we get to the news, lots of bad news.
Lots of bad news in the world.
I'm phrasing it as news you can use, because I'm not sure if the things that we're going to mention in a little bit are things that people are getting, depending on where you're living.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're big news in our world and
mm-hmm.
in our internet world and the friends that we have, but I'm not sure if it's making it across
right.
the channels.
Yeah, I'm always unsure what makes it outside of my Facebook feed sort of thing.
Yeah, so we're going to do some, unfortunately, some sad newsy things, which doesn't really vibe with our mood, but that was our plan for today. So.
Yeah. Before we do that, though, as we said last week, we had a couple of comments that we wanted to bring onto the Accountability Corner. Theme song still wanted.
Accountability Corner.
At Menards. Something better than that. And we wanted to specifically take sort of more time to address an iTunes review that we got, which we're super grateful for. We really appreciate iTunes reviews a lot, so please leave them, even if they are somewhat critical. And this one was both very complimentary, like the first many sentences of the review are really, really nice, and we appreciate that. And then they had some really constructive feedback, I think, at the end. So username Get Me a Soda, Please says...
like a polar soda?
Perhaps. The gist of it is... they were talking about the way we talk about race as two white women. And I will quote this part. So they specifically say they seem to exempt themselves from this group of, quote, other white people, not hesitating to demonstrate themselves as great examples of how white people should behave. And I think that is, like, really important feedback to hear as white people that are invested in being allies slash accomplices, and to really think critically about how we talk about race, which I think we try to think critically about a lot, but I 100% think we mess up sometimes, particularly when it maybe comes off like, oh, we're so woke, everybody should be like us, etc. So we want to respond to that. Mel, do you want to start us off in that response?
I would love to. So I took this past semester a class called Culturally Relevant Pedagogy to basically make our curriculum at school more culturally relevant. The gist is in the title. But as I was going through the class, I promise this is about the review. As I was going through the class, I started to take on that persona that the reviewer so aptly described of like, I'm better than most of the people in this class. I've been doing this for a lot longer. I already have a collection of, you know, non-white men as the examples in my class. You know, like I was, in my eyes, light years ahead. And I was really taking that on and commenting along those lines in the class. Then one of my coworkers, who I mention on the podcast sometimes, she sent out an article to us called Teaching Our Own Racism, Incorporating Personal Narratives of Whiteness into Anti-Racist Practice. And it's written by Dr. Brookfield. And he's local to Minnesota. But I pulled it up and I started reading it and I was like, oh, this is totally me. So what this professor does is he calls out other white people. So he's white himself, other white anti-racist educators, and basically says, you're holier than thou approach to things about separating yourself from other white people and saying, this is the way it should be done, is actually really alienating and it doesn't do much good. And he argues, I'm kind of using his arguments and also some quotes that he uses. So I'm like basically retweeting his tweet of a tweet, if you will. But within the article, he pulls out an argument that says, it's best if we want to teach about racism to teach about our own racism. So that means you call out your own racism as it happens, and that's the best way to actually talk about it. So he's an educator as well. And one of the examples he gave was his own microaggression that he did in the classroom. So he went around and subconsciously or unconsciously did not get the viewpoint of a woman of color in the class. And the class went on a break. He reflected on it and he called himself out like in his classroom and said, I just did this, and this is an example of a microaggression. And a student said, but you didn't mean to do it. And he said, no, of course I didn't mean to do it. It's just, I did it and it happens. And this is how racism works. Mm-hmm. And so that's a lot more compelling for people than the opposite of like just teaching what microaggressions are. So I will make this article somehow accessible because I think it is behind a paywall. So we'll put it up on the website if you're interested in it. Another way to maybe just like sum up what he says is like pull one quote out and it says, instead of trying to purge ourselves of this racism or conceal it or damp these racist, you know, us being racist in our everyday actions, like acting like we aren't racist ever, right? We're like the perfect white people. We are actually supposed to make these racist inclinations public and to engage learners in consideration of how to recognize and challenge them moving forward. So I think that's really the answer. Like, I'm really glad that that person left that review because it reminded me of this article. And then it reminded me, aha, I just learned this, that being this holier than thou white person is not helpful. You don't get any extra points. You know, POC are not like taking notes and like checking things off and being like, she passes, you know, it actually doesn't even matter what people of color think about us. It's that we're doing the work that needs to be done, especially with fellow white people, but not in the holier than thou way that we've been called out for doing.
Yeah. I really liked this article that you were just referencing as well. And thanks for sharing it with me too. Another thing I liked about it is how much the author discussed the way that racism can manifest in terms of sort of exotification or special treatment, which I think a lot of like anti-racist white folks end up doing, ourselves included, whether that's, as we've discussed a lot, given that we know the structural challenges that POC and the world face, maybe being easier on our students who are POC, but in a way that could potentially also not hold them to the same standards as other students, which is also problematic, or never. This is actually something to bring back a discussion about tense conversations in a class that we took in grad school. You know, basically everything that came out of, there was a woman of color in the class who was doing a lot of calling out. And it was like, well, everything she says must be true and right because, you know, she's a woman of color and I'm not. And while that's true, I think about certain experiences and like her experience, for example, I obviously would never argue about. But it was like, I was like, everything she says must be gospel, which is also kind of exotifying and like not recognizing the humanity of all people and that, you know, poor people can be, because I do a lot of work to be like, not all poor people are bigots, but sometimes poor people are bigots and like, it's okay to say that. And we do a lot of work to say that everybody of every race can be an asshole and like, it's okay to like recognize that sometimes, or not doing the sort of other end of the spectrum by being like, I'm so anti-racist that every POC is a person of color is, you know, can do no wrong. Does that make sense?
Right. Have you heard about the concept of the stereotype threat?
Remind me.
It's this idea that people of color are worried about fulfilling stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And so they work really hard to mask them if they think it's a stereotype, or like mm-hmm. they're always thinking about it. It's like, mm-hmm. like that double consciousness theory.
Yeah.
And so as quote unquote woke white people, we are also aware of those stereotypes. And so we are just always trying to, we just never want to have them affirmed ever in our space, you know, even if, so like, right. The stereotype of like black people being lazy. It's like, mm-hmm. okay, well, what if you have a black student that's being fucking lazy, which right. I've had.
Yeah.
Are they being lazy because they've had a really hard time in their life the last couple of weeks and are supporting mm-hmm. three family members? Maybe, or maybe they're just like being lazy. Mm-hmm. But I think what this article is arguing is that we often go to the like, they can do no wrong. I need to cut them some slack to beat the system. Mm-hmm. We cannot reaffirm the system, but that doesn't help them at all because then we just give them a free pass. They're going to come to a space in which they don't get a free pass and they won't know how to work. If they are choosing to work within the system, it's better for us to teach them how to work within the system mm-hmm. than how to get like through the system really quickly because yeah. they're not always going to run into us. And then, yeah, it is like, I think this author would argue that it's a racist move for us to even make accommodations like that, mm-hmm. making accommodations that they haven't even asked for.
Yeah, I think it's really, I mean, it's really, really, really tricky. And I don't know if I 100% agree with the idea that we shouldn't accommodate people that we know without question do face more structural mm-hmm. challenges. But I do know that to like pat ourselves on the back for like giving our marginalized students an easier time is not also not helpful. I don't know. I'd be interested in other educators and also just like the way you move through the world. Also, this is a lot of white people processing. So again, we'll make a note that maybe again, something our POC listeners might not be like interested in hearing white people try to figure out how to be white people in the world. But like sometimes they'll, you know, there's a stereotype, you know, that idea that white women will cross the street if a black man is walking on the same side of the street as her. And there are times that I'm like constantly afraid of all men that are around me. But if it's a black guy, I want to make sure that he knows that I'm not afraid of him. So I will Snappies. Be very scared yes. because I'm scared of all men. But I will not cross the street because it's like, nope, I'm going to be just fine. Even though I like want to cross the street when any, mostly men. I mean, I'm generally not afraid of women in public, but it's fucking complicated. But all of this is to say, we clearly don't have it right. I think there have been episodes where we're like, look at how woke we are. So thank you, listener, for calling that out. We'll continue to try to be better. I hope this like awkward conversation we just had like demonstrated that we are not perfect and we don't think we are and that we still have a lot of work to do and we want to keep trying to be better.
It'll just be something that we're going to keep in the forefront of our mind and call in each other about. Mm-hmm. And I really like the author's idea of like turning to narratives about our own lives instead mm-hmm. of lecturing.
Yeah.
You know, so I think like you're like the story that you just shared about not walking on the other side of the street when a black man comes around. I do the same thing. Mm-hmm. Or I'll do the, like, have you ever seen the meme about the white smile, the white person smile when a black person passes by?
No, but I can envision
it. This is clearly like me, yeah, by a black person. Right. And it's like the, like, yeah, tight, like, smile, like I shared it with my brothers, yeah, and they're like, oh, I do that. I'm like, I know, we all do that.
Hey, I like
you. I'm down with you. Right. And they're like, yeah, okay, you're doing that. Right. But, yeah, like, you know, sharing these narratives,
yeah,
is a lot more humbling and it's a lot more accessible,
totally,
than being like, oh, you do change sides of the street when a black man?
Right.
Because I don't.
Right.
That doesn't,
yeah,
help.
Yeah.
So I think we, yeah, need to, like, refocus. And that's good for the podcast. It's also good for our teaching. It's also good for engaging people in our communities.
So thanks again to that iTunes reviewer. And again, leave us more, including call-ins/call-outs. I think we can agree that the news is ruining the dinner party this week.
Yeah, our whole episode is basically like, who's ruining the dinner party? These guys.
Yep. So we want to start with talking about the terrorist attack at the Ariana Grande show in Manchester, England. It's tragic, and death of innocent people is fucking terrible. We do want to dig a little bit more into some of the implications of it, even though what we're not going to do is, like, try to say, this is what ISIS thinks and wants, because we don't actually have solid information about the person who did this. As far as I know, as of recording, we don't have solid information about the person who did this. I mean, I think it's been connected to an ISIS-like network, at least.
Yeah, and ISIS claimed responsibility.
ISIS did claim responsibility. Okay, but
which also means nothing, because they, right, can claim responsibility for anything.
Exactly. It was just like Pulse. So we're not going to try to really talk about the motives of the individual, but we do want to talk about some of the sort of other implications of this. So one of the implications is that this happened at a pop star's concert, and this pop star attracts largely crowds of young girls. You know, that's just sort of the nature of pop stars like Ariana Grande and Miley Cyrus at a certain point, and et cetera, et cetera. So there's been a lot of people writing about the unique sort of cruelty of targeting young women and girls. And again, whether or not that was specifically the motive of the person who bombed the location, we don't know for sure. But we do know that it resulted in a lot of people, Ariana Grande fans, dying, right? And even more than that, what it also resulted in is people on social media responding to that particular location as an opportunity to create jokes, demonstrating the ways in which our society thinks of young female pop singers as sort of shallow, not valuable, not, you know, if it's not quality music, then if it's just like teeny bopper or whatever music, then it's that these people don't deserve to live. I mean, it's mind-boggling. There are these sort of implications and sort of societal reactions about this. And so that's sort of some of the feminist response to that, which I think is worth noting. Whether or not it was the actual motive to, like, target young women and girls, we don't know. But we do know that that was the result, and that it resulted in some of these, like, really awful, quote-unquote, jokes.
I would add to it as well that I agree with, I think we'll link to some of these articles, because I think the think pieces do a better job than we could ever do on explaining some of this. And I think digging into how disrespected music is when it's produced by women or made for women is just, like, something to be reminded of and just to think about. I also was thinking about how when you were talking about when you were younger and that, like, fangirl that comes out in you, and, mm-hmm, like, how excited you were. Like, I remember that clearly. And I remember when it went away. That's where these people were at. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this music brought a lot of joy to these young girls. Mm-hmm. And I remember distinctly how important music was to, mm-hmm, my life, especially when things weren't going well. That was very clear in, like, some of my old journals. I was so hyper-focused on music because it was the only thing that made, totally, me happy. Obviously, this makes it a unique, what one writer was calling, like, a unique atrocity. But also, I'm worried that it's reaffirming some of these stereotypes about Islam, that Islam is against women being anything but subservient, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's stereotypes that I hear my students saying about, like, women aren't empowered in Islam, they're meant to be subservient, they can't be sexy. And if you actually talk to Muslim women, they would tell you something different. But I'm just worried that it's gonna, because people love to conflate anything that ISIS does with, mm-hmm, Islam, that, mm-hmm, it's gonna reaffirm the stereotype that being sexually provocative, as Ariana Grande Ariana Grande is known for, and provocative, that's not a bad thing. Confident with how she looks and being mm-hmm. very sexy and being very, you know, empowered by that, it's going to then make connections in people's head like, oh, well, this is what Islam is about. See, it's bad. It's bad for women. And then that's where the, you need to take your veil off,
right,
starts coming in. So
totally. I mean, and it's the same thing that happened with Pulse, the Orlando shootings, and it created a pathway for what we've talked about on the show before, which is in academia, some activist spaces talked about as homo nationalism. So in that case, it's how can you further marginalize generally sort of the Middle East in general, but Islam in particular, by saying, look how bad they are for in that case, the gays. And then you can also say the same thing about women. So I'm not like, I mean, that's what people refer to as like Western feminism partly too, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah. And of course, ISIS does not equal Islam. Let's just make that very fucking clear. ISIS is to Islam as Timothy McVeigh is to Christianity. So
mm-hmm. you've seen the burqa versus bikini comic?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that comic is relevant in like so many situations, but mm-hmm. this is another one where it's like a woman in a bikini, a white woman in a bikini saying like, you're like, look at how the patriarchy is ruining you, mm-hmm. you know, hijab wearing Muslim woman. And the Muslim woman is saying the same thing back to her. Like,
yeah.
Look at what the bikini is doing to you. It's like mm-hmm. the men are deciding what you should wear.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it just makes you think there's different views of who is empowered with what when you're wearing what.
Mm-hmm,
I had one of my students gave a talk at school about how when she covers herself, it's actually really empowering because then she doesn't have to deal with the male gaze all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Nobody looks at her.
Mm-hmm.
And for her, that's better because then she can move through the world and focus more on her dedication to Allah than mm-hmm. Living within mm-hmm. the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. Definitely not my area of expertise, but I definitely hear lots of things from my Muslim students
yeah.
about why they like to stay covered.
We have a potential upcoming interview. Our friend of the podcast, Shireen, remember, recommended yeah. somebody for us to interview on the same topic. So we're going to try to set that up.
Radical. All right, let's keep going with this wonderful news roundup. What's next?
Shall we talk about all the fucking ICE raids happening?
Before we get into that, or we're going to get into that, but just as a caveat before we start talking, just like a lot of other traumas that happen, we are very aware that these ICE raids have been happening forever and mm-hmm. that Obama deported more people. We know the stats. There's just a couple that have popped up in the last week that have made news for specific reasons. So we're not saying like, oh, look at this new tragedy that everybody must focus on.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to make sure you know about these two specific ones because they're unique in some ways. So Rachel, tell us about your sister city, Ann Arbor.
Yeah. Home to me for two summers, Ann Arbor. This made headlines because the pieces of shit that worked for ICE had breakfast at the restaurant where they then, after eating breakfast, then detained people in the back of the restaurant, the cooks.
That made their and fucking staff breakfast.
That made their fucking breakfast, those pieces of fucking garbage. So it was like a particularly egregious and disgusting raid. And not even all, you know, some of them were legal citizens also. So it was just like fucking humiliating trauma. Not that people who weren't legal citizens deserve that either, because fuck ICE and fuck borders and fuck capitalism and global capitalism that creates these situations. But it was, so it was totally disgusting. And the owner of the restaurant was interviewed and talked about just how humiliating and awful it was for her employees and devastating for the people who ended up being detained. And one of them who was detained and was a legal resident, you know, she was like, what happened? And he just pointed to his skin and was like, a Mexican, and just pointed to his skin and was just like, this is why it happened, which is just like some powerful fucking testimony of fucking racism. So that happened. And I want to unpack this a little bit more, but do you want to talk about the thing that happened in St. Paul before I do that?
Yes. So in St. Paul, somebody was on our light rail and was asked for their fare. So you have to show them your ticket. And he apparently did not have his ticket to be on the train. So then the Metro Transit police asked him if he was here legally, because like, I guess that's one in the same with fare evasion. And so this is, you know, again, what ended up happening is he's being deported back to Mexico because he was trying to stand up for himself. He was recording what was going on. He was very aware of his rights, but because he was pushing back, it gave the transit police some wiggle room to, you know, on their side, they felt like they had more room than to interrogate him and arrest him. This is what people are afraid of, is that random police officers will just start doing the work of ICE, doing the work of Homeland Security. And this is especially now going to put a chill throughout the immigration or the immigrant community in Minneapolis and St. Paul, because we are hosting the Super Bowl next year. And Homeland Security is already around the light rail, just kind of, well, what they say is they're like studying light rail, right, for like a horrible terrorist attack that I hope never happens. But that is also really freaking people out. And it's interesting now that somebody in St. Paul on the light rail system was acting as ICE or Homeland Security when they don't even have the, it's just so frustrating because they're clearly only asking specific people about their immigration status, as if people from South America, Latin America, Mexico are the only people that are here illegal, which is not true. And this is what people are fearing, and it's happening, and it's not right. The thing is, you can't fuck with ICE, and you can't fuck with the FBI, and you can't fuck with Homeland Security. It's hard.
I think it was in France, some activists set a detention center, or like their equivalent of ICE, like their van on fire. It could slash their fucking tires. Where are they going to go then? I don't know. I mean,
people stood up in Phoenix too. They were blocking an ICE truck.
Yeah.
There are moments of community.
Yeah.
Maybe that, I mean, I really hope that would be the case.
Yeah. I mean, if that could get organized, I'd be all about it.
One of our news you can use updates in just a second is actually going to be about people who stood up to bigots. Yeah. But yeah, I think the answer is community uprising.
Yeah. The only other thing that I want to say about this is I sort of mentioned it when I was ranting a couple minutes ago, but just the fact that so rarely do people talk about the roots of immigration, and whether you think these ICE raids are a problem or not, even if you're like, well, it would be nice if the immigrants could stay there, nice people, you know, I think a lot of people still have like a humanitarian response to immigrants, but still don't think about these like root causes of why people are driven out of their homes to try to find some kind of economic livability in another country, which is not, if you can just put yourself in those mm-hmm. shoes, like, I don't think that's people's first, I mean, I know because I read and listen and have worked in spaces with immigrants. That's not like necessarily first choice. There's a million different scenarios why people would come here. But one common one is that neoliberalism, global capitalism, free trade, free market capitalism that enables corporations in first world nations like the US to build factories overseas, largely in Central and Latin America, if it's in the US, also China, without regulations, without unions, without fair wage laws, allowing them cheap labor for maximum profit, means that fucking exploitative fucking labor that destroys those economies in some cases. And some people are going to fight me on this and say sometimes it can help those economies. I know those arguments.
Don't start with her. She knows how to argue.
Don't even start with me. The fact is that first world nations and global capitalism are creating the reason for so much immigration. And then for us to fucking turn around and mm-hmm. say, no, you can't come here. It's fucked. We're creating the fucking problem. Immigrants aren't the fucking problem. We're creating the fucking problem. Capitalism creating the fucking problem. It's fucking bullshit. So that's one. Two, private prisons are fucking coming in their pants because of Trump's goal to deport as many immigrants as possible. Obama was already deporting the more than any other president, 30 to 40,000 people average a day under Obama. Trump wants to up that to 80,000 a day. I can't even wrap my fucking head around that. 80,000 people a day he wants to deport. You can't just automatically deport somebody, so you have to hold them in detention centers. They call them detention centers. That's a euphemism for prison. Mm-hmm. Immigrants are the highest growing percentage of people who make up our prisons, including private prisons, which means that private prisons are making money off of deportations, and Trump knows that. He's going to profit fucking off of it. This is contributing to the prison industrial complex, and so it's another reason that when you hear people who are abolitionists or abolitionist sympathetic, like myself, this is part of it. It's a problem. Fuck ICE. Fuck borders. Fuck global capitalism. It's ripping families apart. It's not okay.
When I talk to some of my students and they tell me why they came to America, it's always like, so we can get an education because there's, you know, because the economies that are in their countries, and I'm talking about like West Africa, East Africa, you didn't even bring up wars, like civil wars that.
Or stop stealing resources from places where we fucking take their fucking resources so they have limited resources in those lands and then have to fight each other for it because we fucking take their resources.
Oh, like you mean like when Coca-Cola steals people's only drinkable water?
Maybe something like that.
And then they say, I'd love to live in a country that has drinkable water. I'll go to America. And then they say, you can't be here. And they're like, but you stole all our water and I just want something to drink that it won't poison me. And they say, nope.
Yep. That's exactly what I mean.
Meanwhile, by the way, all of us, and I'm learning about this more about myself. Most of us are immigrants. We all got to, you know, I'm German and Swedish, and my ancestors came over when there was this big push to get Europeans over here. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was just lucky that I came over, that my family came over when it was legal. They didn't let all European, you know, they had rules. My family was some of the quote unquote lucky ones. Immigrants come over here not because they want to like steal our resources, because they need things that Americans at this point have stolen away from them.
Have stolen, exactly. And I just, to clarify, so like most white people here in the U.S. are immigrants from their, you know, their ancestors. Native people are not immigrants, obviously. So that some of the anti-Muslim ban protests had, like, we are all immigrants. Native people are not immigrants. They are native people. And African-Americans are not immigrants. They were stolen and kidnapped and taken here. So two clarifications on that. Not everybody in the U.S. is an immigrant. Not native folks and not people whose ancestors are slaves, but pretty much the rest of us are. And so it's, completely fucking bananas that we live in a world where this fucking piece of shit in the White House, including our last president also, can say, nope, you're not allowed to come here. It's garbage. Moving on.
Last but not least. All right. This one sucks. I hope everybody knows about, well, what some people have been referring to as a terrorist attack in Portland.
I would say it's a terrorist attack.
Which is a, the correct use, well, the definition of terrorism is up for grabs. And the media likes to use strategically, just like how they like to use detention center. Like, mm-hmm. they don't have to use it. It's just mm-hmm. kind of like the journalists just kind of keep copying each other when mm-hmm. it's really a prison that they're in. Mm-hmm. Same with terrorism, that journalists are very specific about when they choose to use the word terrorism. And we interviewed a scholar, Dr. Ruth DeFoster, many episodes ago, and she talks about this issue specifically. Not sure how you've read it, if it's a terrorist attack or not, but we are referring to the killing of two people on a Portland light rail train who were standing up for two women who are assumed to be Muslim. And we're saying assumed because they haven't spoken with the media at length, besides one who just started speaking with the media. So this is just assumed based on witness accounts. But a known white supremacist, which Rachel will rant on in a moment, a known white supremacist was attacking these two women, and three men stood up to defend the women, and the man stabbed all of the men, and two died and one is in serious condition in the hospital.
I think it's incredibly important to talk about, because to talk about the different kinds of terrorism that are happening in the world, including the terrorism of white supremacy, which happens, you know, subtly every day.
All the time,
but also in really horrifying, violent ways in cases like this, as well as in cases like police shootings, et cetera, et cetera. This is also really fucking disturbing and relates back to our call out culture episode and like shutting down hate speech and hateful people, vigilantes such as mm-hmm. this person, this terrorist who went to the free speech rally in Portland that was happening that a couple weekends ago, along with across the nation marches that were similar to that, who at this march, this rally for free speech, was doing the Heil Hitler sign, saying racist shit, had a baseball bat that was confiscated by the police, but other than that, was being protected by the police, right? Was being protected to going on with his Heil Hitler and racist rants. And then a week later, you know, he murders two people. So it's not okay to let this kind of shit happen, whether it's, you know, these rallies are emboldening people.
With all the surveillance that they're doing on quote-unquote Muslim extremists,
mm-hmm.
they're not doing the same thing with these people,
mm-hmm.
with these white supremacists, because otherwise they would be in a lot of trouble too and being questioned by the FBI all mm-hmm. the time, or being stopped at the airport
mm-hmm.
because they were at a certain rally, you know, instead of being at a certain mosque or talking to somebody.
Completely. Did you see those images of Richard Piece of Shit Spencer with his, like, tiki torch rally?
I'm just laughing because
it was literally TV torches.
It's like cultural appropriation, which they don't give to. Anyways, there's a lot there.
There's a lot. There's a lot.
I did hear about the tiki torch.
Did you see the image of it? It
was like burning crosses.
Yeah,
or it looked like
they were tiki. They're literally tiki torches. Yeah. I mean, it was like
I saw that.
Yes, so a bunch of like white dudes with flaming torches. I mean, they were, it's hilarious kind of because that's what you like have at a garden party, but also they were trying to look ominous and it was like fucking flames, right? It was like, it looked like a fucking KKK rally because that's what it is basically. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if it was a group of Muslim people or black folks who had that same, again, tiki torches sort of like hollowness aside, fucking flaming sticks? No, that wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen. The police would fucking shut that shit down or shoot people or a mix of both.
That's called being black with a gun too.
Right.
I mean,
yes.
That's what the Black Panthers were trying to like push so hard. Was
exactly.
Like, why is this so threatening?
It's horrifying. And this tragedy in Portland, I think, just demonstrates the problems of quote unquote tolerating the right, the quote unquote alt-right. So it's fucked. And I think we need to support Antifa, Black Bloc folks that are trying to militantly resist this. I think this is now more than ever a reason to support those groups.
If I'm not mistaken, there's a BuzzFeed article about this, but it's a collection of somebody's video of this piece of trash that they, thankfully for people like the Antifa, they go to these rallies and they just document these. And I know that they do that to our side too, that people come over and record. But I mean, they got his stuff on video and on camera. They like, people take the time. That's like, it's a lot of work. It's exhausting to go to those rallies and especially like having to hear all that stuff.
Totally.
But they're doing this important work so they can document and show very quickly that these people are dangerous. And I know for a fact that they can show this to the police all they want and they're not going to do shit, but at least we have, somebody's keeping record of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is very important.
Because like we know with sexual assaulters, like we often have to hold those people accountable and that we just pass it around the community. You know, we're just like, this guy's no good, pass it on. And so if the police aren't going to do anything about it, at least we have documented evidence that these people are no good. You pass it on and do what you need to do to keep yourself safe.
Yeah.
Do you think this is going to keep people from helping out?
I think that's a really good and scary question. I mean, it definitely flashed through my mind. I was like, what will I do now on a train if I see somebody being harassed?
Or another way to put it might be easier to answer. Because this unfortunately led to the death of two people, do you think this kind of behavior is going to be seen as more threatening? Therefore, police will get, well,
whether we want police involved or not.
All cats are beautiful, but I mean, like, you know, that'll be taken more seriously instead of like, he's mentally ill.
Right.
Or like, don't just ignore him or that people will actually take it as a serious threat.
I'll be curious. I don't know because, you know, we have a historical record of the police not responding to white racists. And I'm not sure that this is going to be any different. I don't know. I think people will always want to be good. I think that, you know, good people are all, they're just going to, it's just human nature to want to, no, I would say, I guess I don't, whether it's human nature or not is beside the point. I think people will still want to be good and be allies and stand up to people because, I mean, that's, if we're talking, earlier you were talking about the definition of terrorism and technically it's like making people afraid of doing what they would normally do. And I think that the way that terrorism works is because it's more than likely not going to happen that something bad is going to happen if you do that thing, which is how I felt honestly at Boston Calling. I was fucking terrified because it was the same week that Ariana Grande happened and, you know, I have anxiety. So, but it was like, okay, we're going to go anyway. And that's whatever. Fucking, if you don't go, the terrorist one, whatever. If you, I mean, I'm not trying to evoke George Bush rhetoric here, but I think that people will still try to be good people regardless of that, of the fact that this just happened. Whether or not it's going to mean that people in law enforcement try to buckle down more on white supremacists, I don't know, because they're fucking white supremacists too. Sorry, not sorry. What do you think?
I was reading a couple of statements. The person who survived, I didn't even name them, Micah Fletcher, who survived, he's actually an anti-racist, wrote something from the hospital that was basically like, this is what we do. Like, we will die for this. And I know that there's a lot of activists out there, maybe even listening, that feel the same way, that they wouldn't have done anything different in that situation. They would have stood up. I know that that's how he feels about it. Another interesting anecdote, if people aren't familiar, Rick Best is one of the people that passed away. The other person has an amazing name that is impossible for me to pronounce because I'm American and don't know anything about names that aren't American.
They very well could be American. It's just not like a...
Oh, I'm making fun of my own Americanism. Like, I'm so, culturally...
It sounds potentially... Now I'm going to sound like an idiot if I'm wrong. It sounds Hebrew. I think it's probably Hebrew. Taliesin, Myrdin, Namakai, Meshe.
I'm just...
European white folks over here. What Eastern... Western European, rather.
Anyways... All of my problems aside, Rick Best is a military vet, Republican,
mm-hmm.
based on what is mm-hmm. being reported in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes you think as well, because mm-hmm. I think we paint people, I have a tendency to paint people with a broad
mm-hmm.
stroke and think Republican white dude, he would never stand up for something like that. I mean, mm-hmm. he probably just believes all, the stuff that guy was saying,
mm-hmm.
puts it up. And I think it's also, an interesting response to gun rights people who love to say, we need to have more military people around or people with guns. And that guy had training for combat, mm-hmm. and died, mm-hmm. I don't think violence is the, responding with violence is the answer. Not to say that he did or did not respond with violence.
I think this is why we need to have friend of the podcast, Elias, back on the show to talk about guns, perhaps, or somebody else who give an argument for the other side of that.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily saying that it would have been different if he was armed. I'm just saying that there are arguments for both sides of that. Yes, he was trained. I don't want to get gruesome about the details of it, but it was, I think, very likely a sort of surprise attack the way that
right.
it happened.
Yeah.
Blech. Yeah. I don't have answers for this. What I do know is that we can't rely on this is actually something, a huge problem I have with the way they do sexual assault trainings at colleges. Mm-hmm. Most college campuses have something called the Green Dot Program. Have you heard of this? Do you have that too? It's a bystander intervention program. Let me repeat that. Sexual assault training on college campuses is a bystander intervention program.
I mean, so they don't teach you about how to not be a sexual assaulter?
No, they don't. Nope. Nope, they don't even tell. Well, they sometimes tell you how to not be sexually assaulted because, don't get drunk and wear short skirts and stuff. But mostly they tell you how to help your friend not get roofied, or help your friend leave a party, or help your friend. I don't even know if they try. They don't think they tell you how to help your friend not rape somebody. They tell you how to help your friend get out of being raped.
Yeah. I haven't gone through the training, so I'm not going to say anything.
I ask my students about this every semester to hear what they think about it, because I think it's bullshit that this is the training. What it doesn't do is get to the root of what Melody just said of how and why not to rape.
And what is rape?
And what is rape? And what are the roots? What are the roots of the problem? Instead, we'll talk about how to intervene. I'm not saying that being a bystander is bad. I think it's great that we have people like the people on the Max that were bystanders and intervened. And it's amazing and heroic. But that should not be what we rely on in the world. We shouldn't rely on people intervening. We should rely on getting to the root of the problem, which is white supremacy in this case, and patriarchy in the case of sexual assault. Generally.
And focusing on where did this person get radicalized,
right.
and shutting that network down, just like we
right.
like to shut down the networks of where people get radicalized for ISIS.
Exactly.
In Minneapolis, we have that problem. There is something going on where people are getting radicalized, either online or in person, with people from Somalia, especially,
mm-hmm.
getting radicalized and going with ISIS. And some of the stuff that it's interesting what comes out is that they just don't feel like they belong here in America. And so they ISIS really amps that up and says mm-hmm. this will be a place for you, and so that's understandable. That's okay, we can work with that.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we work and figure out what's going on with people getting radicalized with white supremacy?
Completely. Exactly. And I'll stop there. This could be a whole episode on that sort of phenomenon. I actually, in our newsletter last week, I linked to an article that talked about the ways that internet organizing and radicalizing is actually much more effective for white supremacists than it is for ISIS. The amount of, somebody's been tracking it, and there is some research about that. And so it's happening on the internet even more effectively than ISIS for white supremacists and white nationalists. All of that is to say, nothing to belittle the fucking truly heroic bystander intervention work that these, I think all men identified yeah. people did, but that shouldn't be what we're focusing on is how to, or it shouldn't be our only focus, let me say.
Right.
So I hope that this, that people want to think about the roots of this in addition to the work of the bystanders. Not a good week in the news, man. Not a good week in the news at all. As we sort of transition out of this, maybe just like a note, we talk about self-care a lot. And I think the sort of, is cognitive dissonance the right word, of like reconciling with all of this trauma in the world, and also like having a really good weekend at a music festival, like, and the fact that we started our podcast talking about this really fun weekend we've been having, and we're going to end with like what books we read after just talking about all that heavy stuff. Like, I just want to take a moment to like acknowledge that I think a lot of us are doing that work on a daily basis when we're like scrolling through our Facebook feed and see our friend just got engaged, or our friend just got a paper published in a journal or whatever. And then all of a sudden we see another trauma that happened in the world, mm-hmm. and having to sit with that and process that and still exist as a human being who can function in some kind of capacity is really not easy. So as we close out of this really heavy news, I hope everybody can just sort of take space to like recognize that it's work to want to stay informed. And it's like what we talked about with me checking out of Donald Trump news that I just wanted to check out, because it's fucking work and it's hard. And these headlines have been really, really hard.
And I would just add to listen to your, or notice like your body, like what's happening in your body. So I've mentioned this to Rachel a couple times that I've been noticing now a clear sign that I'm like getting really anxious is like my throat closes up, or like it feels like it's hard to swallow. And then I just know now that I'm more aware of it, that when I feel that, I just stop whatever's causing that. There's nothing, you know, it's usually self-imposed anxiety, but I stop whatever I'm engaging with that's causing that reaction, or at least just sit with it and acknowledge it. Because I learned from my therapist that you're not supposed to shove it away and say like, why are you anxious? You shouldn't be anxious about this. Why would you be having a reaction to this? Like, this is just the news, not your real life. That actually like makes it worse, that you're supposed to like acknowledge it and then like work through it and go from there.
Yeah. Maybe do some yoga if you can and want.
Or some deep breaths. Or some like sighs, like.
Yeah, totally.
I do that a lot.
Yeah.
And then I have to say, I'm not sighing at you. I'm sighing in general.
Yeah. That actually reminds me, maybe this is a good transition. That reminds me of the character of, you don't watch Girls at all, do you?
No.
The character of Adam, anybody who watches Girls, who listens, and I know many of you do, he is like the most physical actor that I've seen in a long time. He's just incredible with his body, but I feel like he lets go of tension a lot in his body and like his size. So anyway, I think those of you who know the show will know exactly what I'm talking about. He's a good actual model for how to move through emotion that you're feeling in your body, I think. Anyway, on that note, shall we move into our RWLs?
Yes, we should get a theme song for this one.
We should.
It should be like white girl rapping. RWL, what you reading, watching, listening. RWL, it's what we're reading, watching, listening to.
That's like white girls who wanted to be Salt and Peppa song.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I am reading, I'm dipping into some Henry Jenkins and some Linda Williams for podcast research and scholarship research. Excellent. And I just kind of got like a little like academic like zing, like, ooh, this is really fun. Like, I really bond with these people. Like, I just really love their scholarship. So if you're not familiar, Henry Jenkins does a lot of stuff with how people who consume media are not consumers, but they're like engagers with the media. So he takes media engagement very seriously, and he has a lot of different theories about that. And so I like to stay up to date on what he's doing. And I like stumbled across his blog and I started nerding out. And then Linda Williams, I picked up her book, Screening Sex, which I don't know if I've ever picked up the physical book. I've always had like article pieces. That book is very explicit. There's pictures in there.
Mm.
Did you not know that?
I actually didn't. It's from my bookshelf, but it's actually my partner's book.
I mean, the thing that I love about Linda Williams is that she treats pornography like any other media text. And so she...
It's just analyzing.
She does textual analysis.
Yep.
And it's very fascinating.
Yeah.
And I think both of those scholars, what I appreciate about them is that they take seriously media texts that people often just, excuse me, Diesel. Hello, would you like to, we have a cat visitor here. He has something to say about Linda Williams. But that they take seriously media that most people would disrespect. Like hip hop would be another example. So I really like scholars who kind of dig into it, because it actually ends up being the most interesting and enlightening, because you're like, wow, yeah, there is actually some really important stuff going on here that people just like to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I'm doing that. I'm watching Dawson's Creek because I'm influenced by Rachel and Logan. But hey, if you need a comedy bit, I suggest watching Dawson's Creek. It is
It's hilarious.
It's a drama, but it is funny.
Yes.
Because
teenagers taking themselves seriously is funny.
Yeah.
I mean, and also, I'm not to be flippant about teenagers and emotions, but it's, like, funny.
We're laughing at ourselves.
Totally.
We're like, oh, yeah.
I remember that.
I don't know. It's just, like, late 90s TV.
Good soundtrack. Good late 90s soundtrack.
Ooh, yes. Just so good. The clothes are great. The hair is great.
It's fun. It's, like, really fun. Talk about, like, a way to decompress and compartmentalize and cognitive dissonance about the state of the world is, like, watching Dawson's Creek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'm listening to
Swish, Swish, Fish.
Another one in the basket.
Boom, 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 boom. Nice.
And also, I would just like to give myself an LOL for running out of phone data because I was trying to listen to music more, especially biking around the city. And so I put Francis and the Lights on because they're like good bike music. And I don't have the Fi on my phone. So I was just using YouTube to play videos. And did you know that playing videos for like an hour takes up a lot of data on your cell phone, and then it tells you that you're out of data, and you're like, but my phone plan just re-upped 5 days ago, and then you're like, oh, because I listen to music on my phone using YouTube.
It's very hilarious that Melody listens to music via YouTube videos because she doesn't have the Fi. LOL.
What do you RWL read and watch and listen into?
Normally the podcast would inspire me to like hustle and finish a book, but I've literally been reading the same two books for probably almost 2 months now. I just haven't finished them. So you've heard me talk about a book by Durga Chubose, which I'm almost done with, and my Before Bed reading, which I kept not saying the title of because I was embarrassed about it, but then our Facebook group compelled me to reveal the title, and it's a book called You Are a Badass, which is embarrassing, and it's a self-help book. I don't mind self-help. It has a ton of problems, this book in particular, but it's helping me because I am a badass. So I'm almost done with those. I'm also going to start reading your students' zines because you brought them to me to look at, and I'm excited for that because they look super punk rock and fun. Also watching Dawson's Creek, largely in the background. Like, this was not usually my MO. I was a person who, like, if you turn the TV on, it was, like, dark outside, and you don't have it on in the background. It's like, you have an hour, and then you're done, and you go back to music. But I found the pleasure of, like, working at the table with my partner, and he has his little iPad screen on, and if it's, like, mindless work, having it on the iPad. I don't want to, like, sit on my couch in the middle of the day and watch TV. But it can be on an iPad. I'm okay with that. Anyway, so it's been on kind of in the background. And listening to bands from Boston Calling, because I was stoked about all of them. Well, Sylvan Esso, Francis and the Lights, Chance the Rapper, and Bon Iver are all on playlists right now, including my Sculpt playlist, which you heard this morning.
She has good Sculpt playlists. I couldn't take her class because it's too hard, but I sat outside her studio and just sat, danced, sitting down and danced to all the jams.
And you heard me yell,
Blink, Blink! Not yoga. But I did take yoga before your Sculpt class.
It's truly
Blink! In 3, 2, 1! Namaste.
It's so fun.
You're really into it. You're good.
I really like it.
You're a good, that kind of teacher.
Thank you.
Campy.
I can be good for yoga, though, too.
No, I can, right.
I calm down.
You have many sides to your teaching abilities.
It's true. Thanks, Mel. Well, as always, we are grateful for Hard Copy Cartel and their support of our podcast and our logo.
And a special shout out to Spencer.
Spencer. We didn't do this in our check-ins, but we had a really great conversation. I'm watching Spencer tell me smart things about podcasts. That's what I'm watching.
Wink, wink. He's kind of good looking.
He's cute.
Sorry.
I think we need to have like a meta conversation about the way we talk about. Also, it's often men, but we're both queer, so we also think other genders are attractive. But sometimes we sexualize men on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Well, sorry. They've been doing it to us for centuries.
It's true. I know. Anyway.
Hey, one of his favorite podcasts is, isn't it called Guys We Fucked or something?
Guys We Fucked, yeah.
He listens to women
talk about sexualized men. Yeah. Okay.
Anyways, okay. Besides that, he was like super helpful on sharing. Like he is a true feminist, like a true ally. Like, you know what I mean? Like it's hard to find people like that, but like he just wanted us to succeed and we just picked his brain about some like podcast businessy stuff. And he was just like super helpful and
it was great.
Just really.
We have some exciting things in the work, partly thanks to Spencer's inspiration. So thank you, Spencer.
Yeah. He saved us time. He also taught us this really cool trick to make us both sound like we're in the same room, even when we're not. So I'm really excited to try that out next week when we are not together.
I know. Good things ahead.
And we should promo his wide angle podium, right?
Yeah.
Wide angle podium. And not with a Y. Rachel's like, oh, wide angle podium. Like W-Y-D-E. Like, no, not just the regular way you spell it.
Yep. So Wide Angle Podium is a podcast network for cycling podcasts.
For bicycle
nerds.
Super bike nerds. But anyways.
Check him out.
He's in Boston. We're in Boston. I knew him from Minneapolis, and so
we'll link to Spencer's things. Good egg.
I feel like Spencer isn't a good name for him. He needs to have like a secret punk name. I bet you he has one.
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like he's like Spencer. I feel like I'm in Broad City now, and I'm high, but I'm not.
You do kind of sound like Alana. How am I?
Spencer? Okay, that's enough. WTF?
Power.
Bye.
Peace.
Wow. Never heard you like that. You really.
The Alana came out in me.
You really, really changed, Rachel.
Oh my God, check this out. You saw this whole thing, right? Did you miss this?
Oh, Sean Spicer.
Sean Spicer in the bush. Somebody had like a cutout in their bush.